dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the War of Ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. We are privileged to have, as the President and CEO of the Center for Security Policy and career intelligence professional, he is Fred Flights. He has served his country with distinction in a number of capacities as an analyst in the Central Intelligence Agency and the Defense Intelligence Agency, also as a professional staff member on the House Intelligence Committee, much in the news at the moment. He was also the chief of staff to John Bolton when he was an undersecretary of the State Department, and also as the national security advisor to President Trump. Fred, it's good to have you with us. Welcome back.
Hey, Frank, good to be here.
Well, you appeared last night on CNN, of all places. You've been doing a lot of media, particularly in connection with this allegation that the president has endangered national security by his conversations with his Ukrainian counterpart in July. But I think this was the first time, certainly in recent memory, that you were appearing on a CNN program. And congratulations, I thought you acquitted yourself very well, especially under the circumstances.
Well, I was on Chris Cuomo's show. I thought I was on a CNN no-call list because the Senate's been pitching me to CNN for 6 or 7 years, and they never would call back. And it was a rough interview. I tried to make the case that there's real questions about the CIA whistleblower who's made these charges that the president tried to manipulate aid to Ukraine to investigate the Bidens. I said, you know, we have to question who this person is. What are his motivations? Is he making these charges for ethical and patriotic reasons, or is he a partisan? Is he a troubled employee? I made the case that there's, you know, fairly strong reasons to believe that he's working with others based on the way this complaint was written. And I said that a member of the House Intelligence Committee and a senior staffer agreed with what I've said on the air, that it looks like this whistleblower may have been working with outsiders, and these outsiders might be members and attorneys with the House Intelligence Committee. And I said that because I've been on this committee, and I know how whistleblowing works. I've seen whistleblowers in the intelligence community, and I just said we need to check that out. And one member of the House Intel Committee said, I agree strongly with that, and I want to put this guy under oath and ask him specifically, did you work with this committee, and which members of this committee, or which staff members, helped you formulate your complaint?
Hmm. And why is that important, Fred? Does it bear on the content of his message, or is it simply a further indication that perhaps this isn't about making a clean breast of something that he felt was unethical or improper, but indeed a partisan agenda?
Cuomo asked me that, and my answer was because this whistleblower makes certain charges, and to evaluate them, we really need to know where they came from. He says that, for example, the president was trying to influence the 2020 election and that there was a cover-up and there's a quid pro quo. Well, there's no evidence of a quid pro quo in the transcript of the president's phone call to the Ukrainian president. And we need to know who this whistleblower is and his motivations to evaluate these charges. I mean, they'll be much more credible if this person is nonpartisan and came out of pure patriotic, altruistic reasons. Now, bear in mind that the inspector general, the intelligence inspector general who passed this on, he said that there is some sign of partisan bias. I forget how he put it. In this complaint. And I think that that's significant. We need to figure this out.
Right. I couldn't agree more. Fred, one of the other things that I think you have a perhaps unique ability to help with is this suggestion that the president placed this particular transcript in a code word classified server system was proof of his effort to cover up what was done in an improper way. in his conversation with the Ukrainian president. You've actually been involved. You mentioned this with Chris Cuomo last night. You actually were involved in processing and handling some of these sorts of communications between the president and his counterparts. Not this particular document. You were not working at the NSC at the time. But talk about, you know, how accurate these allegations are that something unique and potentially indicative of high crimes and misdemeanors was going on in handling this particular exchange.
This is an important issue. The whistleblower claimed that there was a cover-up, that there was an effort to lock down the Ukraine transcript after the president spoke with Ukraine prime minister to conceal it from other federal employees and maybe from Congress. And I know from my time as NSC executive secretary, I worked on these transcripts. That's not true. These transcripts were always kept in a very highly secure computer system. And the reason, Frank, is because they were being leaked by government careerists in the spring of 2017. Now, this story was completely debunked yesterday when Politico put out a story that said these transcripts were moved to a super secure computer system, not in August 2019, like the whistleblower said, but in the spring of 2018. And it was done because of the leaks. That's exactly what I've been arguing. I didn't know the time of this computer server because it was already in operation when I came to the NSC last May, or May of 2018. This is a fake story, and it's time for the media to drop it. I mean, you see this almost every hour on CNN that there's a cover-up. It's false.
Well, unfortunately, so much of this seems to be now entering the big lie territory. And Fred, I just would ask you about this one thing. I did my commentary on it this morning, but you are one of the country's great national security practitioners, as far as I'm concerned. And I wonder what you make of this now incessant refrain that the president endangered the national security of the United States by this conversation with his Ukrainian counterpart. How do you see that, and what are they thinking when making that claim?
I think this is simply partisanship, that the Democrats are simply turning to their latest effort to take down this president. Now, there's observers who I think are very objective who've been hard on the president. Wall Street Journal editorial board. They've looked at this transcript. They say, look, there's nothing criminal here. There's nothing that merits impeachment. Maybe the president should not have raised the Bidens with the Ukrainian prime minister, but pursuing the issue of why Hunter Biden was getting $50,000 a month is worth pursuing. But maybe for appearance sake, the president should have had that done by a lower level official. But to say this endangers national security, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's just ridiculous. I think that it is creating this perception that this is a mortal threat to the security of the United States, when I don't see that. And there are so many others that are being neglected. For example, these Chinese missiles on parade that we'll be talking about with Mark Schneider later in the show. But Fred, I also think it seems as though this is now indeed part of the broader conspiracy against this president that has been underway for, well, before he became president. And we'll be discussing that in the course of the program with Richard Pollack and with Diana West in the following two segments. And I appreciate very much your sending up this conversation throughout the program, as you have, as well as your great service to our country. And we'll talk with you again next week.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. I couldn't be more pleased to say we are joined by an old friend, Richard Pollack, one of America's great investigative reporters, having served in a whole host of capacities over the years, including as a producer for ABC News, for the Fox News program back when Tony Snow was hosting it. He has been reporting and writing for a variety of outlets, including the Daily Caller. And most recently, he has taken up a new post as the senior investigative reporter for One America News Network, a great outfit. And I couldn't be more excited that he's got the the portfolio of helping the rest of us understand through OAN's media outlets some of the really extraordinary things that are afoot at the moment, particularly here inside the swamp in Washington, D.C., where he and I reside. It's good to have you back, Richard Pollack. Again, congratulations on the new gig.
Thank you very much.
You have been reporting, among other things, on some of the sorts of topics that we've just discussed with my friend and colleague, Fred Flights, about this, well, impeachment inquiry or witch hunt, depending on who is doing the describing. Give us sort of your sense as an experienced Washington observer and chronicler of what is going on here. Is it nothing more than what is certainly meeting the eye at the moment, or is there more to it?
So this is very disturbing in the sense that apparently facts no longer matter. We had, of course, the extraordinary confession by Joe Biden before the Council on Foreign Relations that he threatened small Ukraine with the loss of $1 billion of aid unless the government fired a prosecutor who at the time was looking at a whole range of corrupt oligarchs and other corrupt people in Ukraine. And Ukraine is filled with corruption. Of course, the most important person he was looking at was a Ukrainian oligarch who had as a business partner Hunter Biden, who was Vice President Joe Biden's son. Now, that piece of the puzzle has completely disappeared from mainstream media. Instead, there is a vague conversation that Trump has with the incoming new president of Ukraine, and people are screaming and yelling and saying that this is corruption, that this is a violation of the Constitution, that this is high crimes and misdemeanors. And it really is shocking, given the fact that if you really want to take a look at a shakedown discussion, it was Joe Biden and his boss, Barack Obama, with Ukraine a number of years ago. And by the way, in that Council of Foreign Relations discussion, the president of Ukraine said, well, I'm going to contact President when he was being threatened by the $1 billion loss he fired the prosecutor. The president of Ukraine said, well, I'm going to contact President Obama. I don't think that he supports it. And in that discussion, Biden says, oh, no, I spoke to the president. He supports the withholding of the $1 billion. So this was not just simply Vice President Biden freelancing. This was an official strategy by the Obama administration. And so facts don't matter. That entire conversation has disappeared from our entire consciousness. And what I believe is happening here is what the intelligence world refers to as information warfare, which is attempting to change the internal political discussion in a country against a incumbent leader. Most of those leaders are enemies of the United States, but we are now seeing the very skillful intelligence officers beginning to turn this against our incumbent president, President Trump.
Mm-hmm. This is such an important point, and I want to come back to it in just a moment. But just to bore in for a moment on what you just said, Richard Pollack, the president of the United States, Barack Obama, is being cited as actually one of the defenses of Joe Biden. Last night on a program that my colleague Fred Flights appeared on, which we were just discussing with him, there was an interview with a former State Department official, now a member of Congress, who claimed that Joe Biden indeed wasn't freelancing, that he was simply following the direction of the administration of the time, and indeed that of the International Monetary Fund and the European Union, and that they were all over this prosecutor because he wasn't, in fact, investigating corrupt officials in the Ukraine, that he himself was corrupt, and therefore all of this was above board, and never mind that Hunter Biden would have been one of the beneficiaries of shutting down whatever that prosecutor might have been doing, that this was all on above board and on the up and up. Any thoughts on that rationale?
Well, first of all, the prosecutor who succeeded Viktor Shokin, who was the chief anti-corruption prosecutor
was somebody who was extremely weak on all the oligarchs and pretty quickly dismissed the case against Hunter Biden's company. And the vice president, former Vice President Biden, says in that Council on Foreign Relations confession, or whatever you want to call it, he was bragging as well, boasting, that Biden had a say as to who should be installed as the new successive anti-corruption prosecutor. And he said he got his guy in there. And at the time that Biden was in Ukraine, he also gave a speech before the main parliament. And the Ukrainians already knew about Biden's intervention in the government affairs, and there was absolutely no support for his speech. They was completely silent as he continued to talk about corruption. And Ivan Vinnik, who I've previously interviewed, is Ukrainian vice chair of one of the main committee that deals with national security and corruption issues. And he told me point blank that everybody believed the Biden activity was to save his son, Hunter Biden, and that the claim of anti-corruption crusading by Biden was something that had no credibility with the entire parliament.
So we're being spun, in other words, and again, perhaps as part of a larger information warfare campaign. And Richard Pollack, so just, you know, parse that for us a little bit. If in fact agents of our own government who are skilled in the use of this technique of information warfare are turning it against our own president and his administration, that would seem to me to be high crimes and misdemeanors, and yet that's not what's being investigated here. What's being investigated, at least most immediately, they'll presumably be going off into as many other tangents as they can, but most immediately they're going after this idea that the president had this conversation and that does rise to this level of high crimes. What are the implications, just from your perspective, as again a seasoned Washington observer, of this kind of, well, institutional coup d'etat being mounted against the president of the United States from the intelligence community's quarters?
Well, in another report that I broadcast on One American News, I interview a number of people from the national security world who believe in one, at least one of the intelligence officials, actually several that I spoke to, but only one was agreed to go on air, was that they believe that they see this current crisis, or whatever you want to call it, constitutional crisis being generated by the Democrats. They see the fingerprints of former Obama CIA director Brennan in this entire affair. Now, Brennan and the director of national intelligence, Clapper, these two gentlemen were considered to be the main organizers of a campaign against Donald Trump in the early days of the Trump administration.
Well, going back, actually, before he was still campaigning for the presidency.
Well, that's exactly right. When he was a candidate, they were the ones that also worked with James Comey with the so-called Trump dossier, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that the Trump dossier is a classic information warfare project. And now this anonymous whistleblower document, which we now know has so many inconsistencies, it too reflects the dossier that was done by GPS, Fusion GPS, and financed by the Democratic Party and Hillary Clinton's campaign. So what we know, what we're looking at, I believe, is a second dossier, a second anonymous, flawed document with all sorts of erroneous information. And this is the first step in information warfare, that you put out a scandalous document, that you put the incumbent president or prime minister, or whoever it might be, a dictator, on the defensive, that you marshal the mainstream media and even alternative media to begin to attack it. And then you use the actual levers of government, whether it's a parliament or it's members within an intelligence agency, or maybe it's even the opposition political parties. You mobilize all of them, and then eventually you also mobilize public opinion, and you start getting activists to begin to demonstrate in the streets. These are the classic features of a information warfare campaign that we have trained our intelligence officials to launch against our enemies or enemy states. And in fact, we're seeing it unfold before our very eyes with respect to, I think the first round was the Trump dossier, and the second round, backed by now new official impeachment calls. This is all the effort to discredit and eventually dislodge an incumbent member of government.
This is a perfect segue to our next guest, Diana West, who will pick up this thread, if I can call it that, and help us understand the implications for our country if this is allowed to go forward. Richard Pollack, I appreciate your new and extremely important reporting outlet at One America News. I hope you will be a frequent guest with us. I'll talk with you again very soon. Next up, Diana West.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back. It's time for our weekly visit, one of the true high points of this program, with Diana West, one of our country's preeminent, well, commentators, analysts, authors, pundits, particularly with respect to issues that involve, well, the national security, but also the culture, the historical context in which so much of what is playing out at the moment must be seen in order to be properly understood. These are subjects she's written about beautifully in places like Death of the Grown-Up, American Betrayal, and most recently, The Red Thread, a search for the ideological drivers of the anti-Trump conspiracy. You can find her writings these days at dianawest.net, among other places, the Epoch Times. So good to have you with us, Diana. Thank you for taking a few minutes.
Thank you. Yes, a lot to catch up on.
Well, indeed, a lot since we last talked, as a matter of fact. And I wanted you, we've been discussing sort of some of the particulars in the previous segments with Fred Flights and Richard Pollack concerning what's happening with this Ukraine phone call and the so-called whistleblower and the congressional impeachment inquiries. But I'd like you to, again, put this in context, as you do so well. Talk about the anti-Trump conspiracy, the subject of the Red Thread, but as it relates specifically to this new set of players and institutional activities, inquiries, investigations, and the like.
I think that what we're looking at right now, the latest crisis that really has developed in a big way since we last spoke just a week ago, we have to look at it in the continuum of the conspiracy to first deprive President Trump of winning the election and then to destroy his presidency. This is all of a piece. We move throughout the government in these various efforts against him, in these attacks on his legitimacy, his presidency, his mental well-being. I mean, this is a very much a personal attack on him, and his strength to withstand all of it is truly staggering. But it's a continuum, and when we see them move from the intelligence agencies to now we're in the Congress, we've seen it in the Justice Department, etc., we're just seeing the extent to which Washington is controlled by what we call the swamp, the deep state, this bureaucratic mass that is at its core anti-democratic, small-d democratic. These people are against democracy. They are against the American people choosing their president. And I think that is the most important aspect of this entire era to understand. The people who control Washington and the different departments and agencies are against the election system that we have. And that's really what this is about. Now, one thing I think is not being discussed at this moment because we're just bombarded by so much is something that I kind of came to when I went back to the Trump-Zelensky phone call of July 25th, 2019. What happened the day before, July 24th, 2019? Robert Mueller concluded his testimonies on Capitol Hill in the House and the Senate. And if you remember the elation of conservatives watching that poor performance by Robert Mueller, we thought it was extraordinary. Russian collusion was over, people were celebrating, the Democrats didn't have anything, impeachment's over. All of these things were just trumpeted all over the Trump world, for sure.
And not least, Diane, if I could just interrupt you for a second, one of the other very important leitmotifs of that moment was, it's time to begin investigating the investigators. That Trump was going to be able now to go on offense to find out who was responsible for this anti-Trump conspiracy. And this was presumably a nightmare for those who had been perpetrating it.
This was a nightmare for those who were perpetrating it, if indeed it could happen. But my position is it cannot happen in Washington. And I think President Trump understands the extent to which he does not control Washington bureaucracies. He does not control his own government as a president normally should. And I think that when you see him pick up the phone at 9:03 the next morning and have this conversation with the president of the Ukraine, the president of Ukraine brings up this notion of draining the swamp in both their countries. They have a discussion about that. They trade some information. But I think the important point in that phone call that triggered, I think, that triggered so much what we're watching right now is when the favor that he talks about has nothing to do with the Biden family. It's about CrowdStrike. It's about the server. Now, these are items that are at the basis of the conspiracy against him, which did not come out in any of the Republican questioning of Robert Mueller during that day of hearings the day before. I actually wrote a column attesting to my own serious discordant with out of step, in other words, feelings about the hearings. As conservatives were celebrating, I was extremely upset about the hearings because they did not unmask the actual conspiracy. They did not go to this notion that CrowdStrike essentially fabricated this notion of a Russian hack and all of that, which we've discussed. I think President Trump was totally onto that same wavelength. He has been all along since the beginning of his presidency. We've seen different pieces of that come forward, but which we can talk about if you like. But he saw the hearings were not doing the job. I think he understands his own agencies cannot do the job. And I think when the swamp, the bureaucracy, the deep state, the anti-democratic elements throughout our government, the anti-Trump elements, the anti-American elements, when they saw that he's outside their control talking to someone in Ukraine about CrowdStrike, etc., I think they went crazy because they thought that the whole thing was sewn up, wrapped up, and here's Trump going outside channels. You see Rudy Giuliani, his personal lawyer, waving affidavits on television that the Justice Department in a normal world, for example, would be dealing with, would be engaged in. I mean, the two of them are, in a sense, defying the controls of this perverted government that we now have and that they are exposing. And this, I think, is part of the reason that you see this massive effort to kneecap him with these impeachment inquiries, et cetera, these bogus inquiries with no votes and all the rest of it. It's a staged operation simply to stop him from destroying them. And not only winning the president, but saving the republic. I mean, it's that big a deal.
It's the next part of the coup. And I just want to connect some dots here, Diana, because you have spoken about these issues with us before, but it's so critical to our understanding of what's going on here that I think we need to go back a step. CrowdStrike was, of course, a company with some interesting ties to the Russians, it seems, that was engaged by the Democratic National Committee to manage their server and IT support and so on. Well, I thought that they had an ongoing relationship with the DNC, that it wasn't just that they were brought in at the, you know, to do a postmortem. But whatever the status of their relationship, they were a trusted entity by the DNC, whereas the FBI at the time was not. And CrowdStrike was the only outfit that was allowed to have access to the DNC servers. Correct. And was the outfit that gave us the forensic analysis, which the FBI took as desiderata. They didn't do their own independent analysis. So just, again, with all of that in the mix here, reprise for us your point as to why this would so freak out the deep state, the swamp, whatever you want to call it, the conspirators, that Trump might be seeking, you know, outside of channels vehicle for probing what actually was going on with CrowdStrike?
Well, I think it goes to the very fact that the CrowdStrike DNC collusion on this story that the Russians hacked the DNC server, thereby gaining these emails and also the Podesta devices we have to throw in there, because the FBI never examined the Podesta devices either, the source of the Podesta emails that came out in October through WikiLeaks. You get back to this whole creation, the original sin of Trump-Russia, the entire narrative hoax that we've been living with. If Trump understands that, which he does, obviously, because if you go back to early in his administration, he actually dispatched with NSA whistleblower William Binney, who has done the forensic analysis that indicates this was not a hack from outside on the DNC server, but rather most likely a leak from within, namely that things were downloaded to a thumb drive or some other portable device and taken out. He dispatched Binney to talk to Pompeo as CIA director in something like early 2017. So he's been onto this from the beginning. However, the narrative created by the Mueller investigation, by the hearings themselves, the Republicans are party to it as well.
And by John Brennan, not least, the promoter of this idea that the Intelligence Community had all agreed that this was a Russian job?
Yes, the whole group. And we have a series of documents going back to the intelligence community assessment, so-called, and all the rest of it, that are all based on CrowdStrike's analysis on the Steele dossier, these two completely fraudulent documents.
And in the case of the intelligence community, a highly selective group of analysts handpicked by Brennan to confirm the predetermined.
So if they find out that with all the work they've been doing, successfully fooling everyone, including the Republicans on the Hill and the people themselves who are very confused about everything here, given the media spin, if they know that Trump himself understands this and actually taking matters into his own hands to try to find out what happened with CrowdStrike, what happened with the server, etc., this means that all their not good work, all their evil work can come to nothing, that he can still pull the string and expose the entire conspiracy, all the conspirators, show it to the world and the American people, and triumph over this evil effort to destroy his presidency. And again, getting back to my original point, the will of the American people, the election system itself. So it's that important.
Diana West, we have to leave it at that. Much more to talk about. Thank you for this very important insight, and we look forward to your further reporting and analysis on the subject, as well as our conversations with you next week. Next up, we'll speak with Dr. Mark Schneider right after this.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined by one of the really national treasures of the United States when it comes to matters involving nuclear weapons and deterrence. He is Dr. Mark Schneider. He served with great distinction for decades in senior positions in the Department of Defense. He was a foreign service officer. He really became the duty expert in so many regards, but particularly with respect to strategic arms control and efforts to curb the various threats that we were facing at the time, particularly from the Soviet Union. I had the privilege of working with Mark in the Pentagon during part of his very distinguished career and have considered him a good friend ever since. He is these days a senior fellow with the National Institute for Public Policy and a contributor to a forthcoming book from the Center for Security Policy Press about nuclear arms control and forces and what we need to ensure that ours are up to snuff. Mark Schneider, it's good to have you back. Thanks so much for taking a few minutes.
Well, thank you very much for the very kind introduction.
Heartfelt and well-deserved. Let me talk to you, Mark, against the backdrop of what we saw on parade in Tiananmen Square in China yesterday. It was an array of advanced ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, hypersonic weapons, drones, and other things, some of which had not been seen before, some of which had, but all of which constitute, it seems to me, grave and growing threats to American forces and our allies, but also increasingly our homeland as well. I know you have been following in general outline what the Chinese are up to. I wanted to set up a next topic of conversation with you by asking you just to speak to the point that much of what is in the Chinese arsenal today is within the ranges that are supposed to be limited by this Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty. Of course, the Chinese weren't covered by it, but we're being told that, you know, the Russians want to get back into this. The president has indicated that he's open to a treaty involving the Chinese as well. But just give us a sense, Mark, if you would, of the magnitude of the challenge that we're now facing, not just from the Russians, but from the Chinese with respect to nuclear forces. And then we'll talk about INF.
Well, it's massive and it's growing. The parade combined with the report of maybe a week or two ago of a very large-scale Chinese ICBM exercise, I believe, provides substantial evidence of what I've been arguing for a decade or more, and that is we're dramatically underestimating the size of the Chinese nuclear capability against the United States. The press write-up said that we saw 72 mobile ICBM launchers participating in this exercise. You take that number, add the 18 silo-based ICBMs, which the Chinese have had for a very long time, and it adds up to 90. You go to the Pentagon report, and they tell you the entire size of the Chinese ICBM force is 90 launchers. Well, I think the odds are that they exercise the entire ICBM force in a single day is zero. That has to be only a fraction of what they have, which translates into the estimate of a few hundred Chinese warheads has to be off by a factor of two or three. And that's a big deal.
It is a big deal. And Mark, as we've talked about before, in addition to those intercontinental range ballistic missiles that were being paraded through the streets of Beijing yesterday, there are reasons to believe that the exact number and the character, for that matter, of the missiles that are being hidden in the 3,000 miles of hardened underground tunnels that the Chinese have created for the purpose could be, as you say, very much greater in terms of numbers of launchers, but also numbers of warheads than has been contemplated by the United States government and, you know, the so-called arms control community to date. Which brings me back to this issue that I wanted to visit with you about specifically, Mark, and that is much of what the Chinese have, it appears, at least at the moment, is seemingly tailored to attacking not so much the U.S. homeland, but U.S. bases in the Pacific or allied targets or perhaps population centers as well. These would be relatively shorter range than those intercontinental range missiles. And what does it suggest in terms of the Chinese commitment to maintaining and building these threatening capabilities? And what prospects, if any, would you assign to the idea that they might get into a new treaty regime that would restrict those kinds of missiles?
Well, just the missiles that we know about, the short through intermediate range missiles, are in the thousands. That you can find in the Pentagon reports going back over a decade. So you've got a massive warfighting capability, and it's both nuclear and conventional. Many, if not all, of their missiles are dual capable. They have conventional and nuclear warheads. There's literally zero ground-based capability to deter this with in the Asia-Pacific region. This is not being built by the Chinese for deterrence, because there's literally nothing out there for them to deter. It's being built for war fighting. And it's a very, very effective capability. It's not only precision and near precision land attack missiles. It's an increasing number of dual capable anti-ship missiles, which are designed to go against our surface ships and carrier task forces.
Yeah. When you say dual capable, you mean nuclear as well as conventional capable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's in the Pentagon reports. It's increasingly stated by the Chinese government, and even more so in the Chinese state media, which is essentially everything that's published in China. There are no significant publications in China that are not controlled by the state. The fact that the state is advertising, and this is also in English language publications that they put out, they're advertising the capability that their missiles are dual capable, or in some cases purely nuclear only. The ICBMs are in that category right now. This is much different from the way things were 10 or 15 years ago. We are seeing a sort of a full court press in China about the growing nature of this threat, because they obviously see it as giving them political clout in the Far East.
Right. And unfortunately, they're right about that, I think. Mark Schneider, let me turn to this other challenge that we face, and that is the former Soviet Union now doing business as the Russian Federation. The buildup of missiles and threatening capabilities by Vladimir Putin's regime is something we've talked about often in the past. Let's put that aside for the moment, other than to say that it's great and growing as well, as is the Chinese threat, and the fact that the Russians and Chinese have actually begun exercising joint attacks against the United States is particularly ominous, I think it's fair to say. But just describe for us this idea that the Russians are now proposing a moratorium on missile deployment in the intermediate range and shorter range spaces. What is that about, and what response should we give to it?
Well, NATO has formally rejected it when it became public. The Russians made the proposal public. It's a proposal for a moratorium in certain areas, which they didn't say specifically, but it's obviously the Europe and areas which are in range of Europe. And the objective of this is to give them a complete monopoly on intermediate range, dual capable, nuclear and conventional, ground-launched ballistic missiles. Zero exists in the NATO alliance, and the effect of the moratorium would be to maintain zero forever, while the Russians could not only maintain the capability they have now, which is reported in the press to be about 100 missiles, but I believe they could covertly increase that capability pretty easily.
Mark, there's so much more to talk about. Thank you for joining us today. Come back to us very soon. I hope the rest of you will do the same. Tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.